Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay.
Okay, so when I was young, I watched the Phillies every day. And I lived across the street from an old guy named Benny Bengolf in Margate. And it turns out that he was a coach for the Phillies. And he played on the Yankees. He's the number one card in the 1933 Gowdy set, which is the most valuable card in the set. And after years and years in the business, he became a coach for the Phillies. And then people found out that he was kind of glib, and they put him on the after the game show, where he talked about who was what. And in those days, you could trash people. You could say anything you wanted. This guy said anything he wanted about anybody. But at the end of his show, he always said, to close his show, he always said, and as I always say, to be a big leaguer, think big league. And we kind of mocked it because he always ended it the same way. And it was kind of reading off of a note card, you know, that and never gave it another thought until 30 years later when I'm in business for myself. I'm thinking, I think big league. I always think big league. This guy was brilliant in that he was saying, if you want to make it in this world, you got to think like the big guys think. Mm-hmm. There's no sense thinking like a you know, some guy that's willing to settle for some small salary. You have to think like somebody who wants to make $1 million. And you may have the salary at that
moment.
Well,
you have to think about the guy who, like the guy who is making $1 million.
Right. I want to think like a big leaguer.
Yeah.
And you can say whatever you want about some of the political candidates, but some think small and some think big. And I want a big thinker. I want someone who gets the big picture. And I want to be associated or affiliated with that kind of person. Big league. And if you want to be a big leaguer, think big league.
And we're talking to a big leaguer today on the podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. A huge leaguer.
Steven Dawson.
So Steve was not a big leaguer. I mean, he got to New York.
He was in the little league.
Right. He got to New York. He was in college. He didn't know anybody. He graduated. He had to start
a
business
for himself.
He was
so stupid, he made a $5 million sale.
$10 million sale.
He was so stupid, he made a $10 million.
Let's not give it away, though.
Well, no. He worked his ass off and made the sale. Yep. Somebody liked him. Somebody believed him. Somebody trusted him. And then we show him the property. They go, I'll take it. And he goes, really? You'll take it? I'm certain he was as surprised as anybody that he made the sale.
Probably. Or he had huge confidence in himself and knew he was going to make the sale and expected to make the sale.
The think like a big league, I was thinking about that. And, you know, they always say dress for the job you want. And I think you have to think for the sale you want.
Yeah. Steve and I are in a networking group together, and we meet we meet once a week, every Tuesday at 7 a.m. He's the vice president of the group. I'm the president of the group. And there are very few people I know in this world that I would want to be standing next to me on a weekly basis running this huge endeavor that we run. And, I mean, it's not the biggest thing that we run, but, you know, we have 35 to 40 members. We have 10 to 20 guests every week. And we're putting on a show for 50 people every week.
In New York City. Who already know everything. People are sophisticated business people. Anyway.
Exactly. And he's great. He's a great guy to work with. He does what he says he's going to do. He follows up. He's funny. He adds fun to the process. He keeps it light. He's a great guy. And so I'm really excited that he's on our show today.
Me too. I really like him. I have found him to be extremely engaging. When I met him first, it was at a networking event. I had no idea who the guy was, but I didn't really care what he did. I just liked him as
and
a person.
You liked him immediately,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I know. People are drawn to him. It's cool. So you guys listening will like him too.
You got it. And
Let's listen.
All you have to do is pay attention to what he's going to say, and you will become a thousandaire. Oh, is that? Did I set the sights too low on that? Okay. How many real estate agents are there in New York City?
There's probably 200 agents and about 250 staff.
No. And all of New York City, how many real estate agents do you compete against?
God, 20,000, 30,000.
Yeah. So it's not like it's a non-competitive marketplace. You got to be good.
And you're all competing in like a 100-block radius. It's not like a huge city where you're competing against miles and miles and miles. I mean, you're so close.
I mean, it's a very small geographic area, but within that very small geographic area, you have many different markets. And so while there is a lot of business to go around, there's definitely not enough business for 20 or 30,000 brokers. So what ends up happening in the New York market is you have probably a couple hundred who do most of the business. And so my partner and I in the last 2015, for example, did about 110 million in sales. And we've averaged about that the last 2 to 3 years. And so we're considered one of the top teams and individual brokers in the city.
And what do you attribute that to?
Well, so I think, what's the, I guess, the lame answer? Hard work. I mean, that's the very simple answer.
I think that sounds like bullshit, actually.
Well, so, I attribute it to a couple of things beyond my bullshit answer. Two is a dynamic that I think we have as so when you're working with someone, as Jeffrey and you both know, when you have a partner, it's it fails a lot of the time. And I think one of the reasons why my partnership works is because we are so different and we have different qualities. So where my background is PR and marketing, Josh's background is finance. And so together we have a really great dynamic with clients, developers, that, you know, really makes us appealing because we bring a lot of different skill sets to the table. On top of that, I think we both love what we do. And I don't think you can fake that. And so, when you love what you do, you're going to work really hard at it. You're going to know what's going on. You're going to devour information and pride yourself on being, you know, at the forefront of the industry. And I think we've definitely done that. And I think that's shows in the amount of business we do.
But with with all due respect, you can be a smart guy. You can be a good guy. You can have a great team. But in New York City, you got to be shrewd. You got to be fast. And sometimes you have to just use your New York City balls to get where you're from one place to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think and for us, we mix a little bit of the shrewd, tough things that you would think you would need to do to be a good broker and a top broker with intelligence. And I think one of the things and one of the most important reasons we came to Compass is we're trying to be around other brokers who are intelligent and who are not just out to get a deal done, but to really kind of build a business and a better business. I think that really plays into the whole business model. It's not just about, getting one deal done. It's really about creating a reputation within the landscape of a business that doesn't have such a great reputation, to really build something that is long lasting and goes within all the cycles of the market.
I learned an interesting thing about your company when I was speaking to you guys, and that's in order to work for Compass, two or three other broker groups need to recommend you, because the idea is, for what I learned, is that most of the deals done in the city are all co-broking deals, and you're not going to do a deal with someone you don't like or you disrespect or you think is sleazy. And so you try to keep the deals within the firm and bring in people that you want to work with.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say we try to keep the deals within the firm, because if we're basing a business off of the co-broke model, which in New York you definitely are, it's very important that you have good relationships with all brokers, with all the top brokers at all the top firms, because that's going to give you the best leg up to get deals done. But I think it's definitely true that Compass. And one of the things we were very attracted to is that not just anybody could come and work here. They really wanted to meet with top brokers who not just made a lot of money, but who were also well regarded within the industry by their peers. And that's huge. So, you know, it's this idea of creating more of, I don't know, a gentleman's brokerage, if you will, of like, you know, of people who are well respected, do good business, and really work well with other brokers.
So in other words, you're the oxymoron of New York City.
Right. A little bit. I honestly, all kidding aside, yeah, I think we are. I mean, there are some top brokers who I don't ever want to do a deal with because they're nightmares, they're complete egomaniacs, and it can really ruin a deal. I mean, you know, the funny thing about real estate, and I can only speak in New York City, deals are so sensitive. They're these kind of like, you know, eggs that you have to carry around very delicately and make sure that they don't fall apart at any given time, you know, and so when you're doing a deal, an attorney can kill a deal, another broker can kill a deal just by not divulging some critical piece of information, or, you know, just being a total jerk. And I've seen it happen countless times where people will just throw their hands up and walk away. And so it's so critical that the people involved in a deal are, you know, really smart, and they're also not total jerks.
And your deals aren't $100,000 deals. Your deals are $5 million deals.
Yeah.
But so, I think it applies universally.
Yeah, it does. But the reason he's talking about it so sensitively,
the reason is
people who have money
They can walk away.
Right, exactly.
They can walk away. Yes. I think we're dealing in a market where it is not as life or death to purchase a single piece of property. You have upwardly mobile people, whether they're buying a studio for $1 million or half a million bucks.
A studio for $1 million is how big? Yeah. Like 400 or 500 square feet?
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, that's getting harder and harder to find. But, you know, my point is, even at what is considered the low end of the New York City market is a demographic that, you know, their earning potential is quite high. They're here for a reason, right? New York is a town full of people who are driven and striving to be successful. And so, you know, the real estate market takes on that personality as well, because they bring that into their, you know, personal real estate transactions. And so they don't have to buy. And so you have to be, you have to know how to handle different personalities and do it in a way that is effective in terms of getting the deal done.
I want to go back to something you said about ego killing a deal. How specifically have you seen a salesperson's ego get in the way of them making a deal?
Well, I think that you have brokers who think they know everything. And my philosophy is you never know everything.
Wait, I thought in New York City people actually do know everything.
They do not.
Oh.
I am sorry.
They think they know everything.
Wait a second, you've just broken one of the biggest myths I've ever had in my life.
It's right. And so here's the thing. You get people who say somebody, you know, I'm relatively young in this business. I mean, I'm 7 years onto the brokerage side. And so, you know, I am surrounded by people who might have more years of experience than I do. But the problem is that when you get a certain type of broker who thinks, oh, I've been doing this for 20 years, I know everything, they don't know everything. And they probably aren't up to date on what's going on.
Yeah, they stop learning. They stop learning what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, this goes into what are the keys to success, right? It's always knowing that always thinking of yourself as a rookie, always thinking that you've got a lot to learn. Those are really important things to remember. And I think people lose sight of that.
I think always thinking of yourself as a rookie is a really important thing. I think the guys that have been doing this for 20 years have never tweeted.
Well, right. So like, you know, knowing, and listen, I'm not a social media guru at all. I'm just getting into that world. But knowing that, I need to get into that world. And it is an important part of the business. And it's something that, you know, you need to do. But, you know, it's a personality type that says, oh, I know everything. I know what I need to know. And then they get into a deal and they screw something up because they think they know everything and they've not actually properly alerted their clients to, say, an issue with the building or a valuation. And that client, in a very sensitive period of time, which is, you know, when you basically make an offer and before you sign a contract, there's a week or two, all this information is found out. And if you don't have the right broker who's really communicating properly with you and taking you through the process, the buyer, the seller, whoever the representative, can get freaked out and walk away. And it happens all the time. And you know, so there's definitely something to be said. And that's why it is so important to have the right representation.
But realistically, would you rather list properties or would you rather sell properties?
I'm both.
I understand that. But would you, if you could have 100 buyers or 100 guys that wanted to sell, who would you rather be with?
I would probably be with the sellers because it's, you know, you, from a business standpoint, if you can get them to be realistic on pricing and the fundamentals of the market, then you have a deal in your hand, right?
I'm going to be talking to a guy named Greg Hegg, who is the real estate maverick. You may or may not know of him.
But who?
Greg Hegg.
No, don't know.
You should look him up. He only tells people to list. Mm-hmm. Because he thinks that buyers are flaky, but sellers got to sell.
Where is his market?
All over the United States. All over the United States. No, he's a
right.
He's the realestatemaverick.com.
Got it. So here's the thing about real estate. It is such a local business. And so in many markets, buyers brokers have it really hard, and it's very hard to, because buyers are just going out and going to the open houses. And just
I know
directly.
Someone whose hobby is to go out and look at open houses. So, he's not buying at all. He just looks
right. And sometimes you have those. We call them looky loos.
What do they call them?
And looky loos.
That's funny.
Oh my God! I like that. Do they just go for the champagne or something, or the cheese?
They just go to see the apartment.
They
look.
Sometimes there's no free anything. They just go to look.
They just go to look. But here's the thing about New York City that's unique, in my opinion. It's a much more complicated market. There's co-ops. There are condos. There are townhouses. There are, you know, condops. And so it's much – and that's why it's such a market where there is – most deals are co-broked because buyers for the most part want and need representation. So I run around with lots of buyers and I actually – quite honestly, I love the hunt. I love running around with a buyer looking for something because it's fun and you get to see a lot of things and I like walking someone through that process. So, you know, it's hard for me to say, oh, I'd much rather just list apartments or I'd much rather just, you know, run around with buyers. I think it's very important if you're going to have a healthy business, it's very important to do both because as the market swings and goes in a different direction, you want to have the buyers when it becomes a buyer's market, and you want to have the sellers when it becomes a seller's market. And that's, I think, it's very healthy to have a good mix of both.
I would wonder if the sellers often turn into two sales because once they sell, then they need to buy something new.
They do, right. Yeah, of course, unless they're leaving the city. Right. So, and then of course we try to refer them to a broker to wherever they're going, but you know, that's not always the case. I mean, but, there's definitely some truth to that, but I think having a balanced business is important. I know brokers who, yes, only list their listing brokers. They're like, oh, I don't want to deal with buyers. That's fine. But when there's nothing to list and
right, then
you
what?
Need business, then what?
Yeah.
So, how do you get your leads right now? How do you?
It's all referrals. It is, I would say, basically 100%. It's all from past business and friends or clients. Like, you know, it's all about referrals. It's total referral business. If I told you that, oh, I send out mailers to people and I get calls and that's how I get my business, I'd be lying. We do them, but I honestly don't see that translate into business most of the time.
You didn't grow up in New York, did you?
I did not. I grew up in Michigan. So I grew up in a town called Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. Which
so
is
you're like a farmer, right?
No. I was a suburban kid. Grew up in the suburbs of Detroit. And came here for school. I came at 18 and I never left.
But you came and had to build an entire network. It's not like you came and knew hundreds of people in New York City. You built a business from scratch.
Exactly. Yeah. So and so, you know, I think that it speaks to people skills and being able to relate and identify and help people, you know, from all different backgrounds. And I think that's definitely a skill that I've honed in this business, because I'm not just dealing with, oh, friends I grew up with on the Upper East Side. I'm dealing with people from, you know, all over the world, country, who have come here and are living here now. You know, it definitely is a skill set to understand.
But it's obvious that they like you. It's obvious
that I'm a likable guy, as I think you both can attest.
No, I personally don't like you, but I'm sure a lot of other people do. but listen.
Oh, please. Steve Dawson rocks.
I know, you're a good kid. So, but here's the deal. You've come to the city. You are, as a relative stranger, you've been here for a decade or so. And
15 years.
Okay, 15 years. And you've done it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done what New Yorkers have not done.
Right.
There's a lot of people
takes
who get
a certain drive. Yeah. There's drive so and determination.
And a certain personality too. I mean, like you said, you're likable.
Yeah. And I think so. It's like, it's, you know, how do you become successful? There's a lot of different things that go into that.
Yeah. You got to marry money.
Right. You got to marry money. Right. Exactly.
Oh boy.
But I think that in your business, where there are a ton of people and there is a ton of sophistication that's involved in it, you have to have way more than affability and knowledge to be able to get these deals done. There's a nuance that you have to have. There's an understanding.
Oh, totally. And I think, but you know, the funny thing about the brokerage business is there's a lot of mediocre brokers out there too. So I think that if you have the drive, determination, sophistication, and dedication, you've got a good shot, as well as a winning personality. So, I mean, but you know what? That's not even true, because there are people who don't have winning personalities who have made it big in this business.
Yeah, they get lucky.
They've gotten lucky, but let's be realists. You know, there's a broker for every type of person, right? So, so I'm not the broker for everybody. And you know, but that's what's great about having a partner too. We're different. We have different styles. And so somebody who, you know, maybe I'm not the broker for them, he might be, or you know what, they might, neither one of us might be. And that's okay. I think, you know, we're really grateful to have such a big book of business, both being, you know, in the business for 10 years and under.
Let's go back to your start. Tell us about your first sale.
So I came into the business from PR, actually specifically new development PR, meaning that I was working for developers, publicizing new luxury condos going up in the city. So I was kind of in the business. I was around the business, just a different part of it. And I got an opportunity to become a broker's assistant for a pretty well-known broker at a different firm called Corcoran. And so I started working for him. And I think the first deal I really worked on was for a very well-known fashion mogul who was buying a townhouse in the West Village. And so, you know, it's interesting. It was a great way to just jump into the business. I kind of was thrown into the mix of, you know, getting the deal done, looking for properties, and, you know, once we found it, making sure, you know, it all happened. And so that was my first deal. You know, it was like a $10 million deal. So, you know, I started at the high end from the beginning. So my experience has always been more on this, of course, the sales side, but more on the high end of the sales side too.
Yeah, but listen, you're on the high end of the sales side when you're in New York City, period.
Well, the average,
if you buy a $1.5 million condo, which is a relatively cheap condo in New York City, you could buy a 4,000 square foot house in Charlotte. Maybe right. 5,000. Well,
so, yeah, it's so funny because I inevitably end up working with people from different places. Of course, they're buying in New York as a pied-à-terre, they're moving here, or I'm dealing with the parents of a child who they're buying an apartment for. And inevitably that will always come up of, oh my God, it's going to cost $1.5 million. They could, you know, they could buy a mansion in North Carolina or wherever. And I say, you can never compare markets.
There's no comparison.
You can't compare markets, but you've talked to, I'm sure, a lot of real estate brokers from around the country in your networking efforts. Are there any universals to brokering real estate?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it comes the skills it takes to work with buyers and sellers, I think, are universal. I mean, market knowledge, of course, is very localized, and you know, like I couldn't talk anything about the North Carolina market. I know nothing about it. But I mean, I think what does translate, of course, is the business acumen, if you will, and my ability to work with a buyer, work with a seller, and advise them based on intelligence and data. That's definitely universal.
And it's also,
and I think you would see that across the board of top brokers around the country and the world.
I think also the level of professionalism is universal. Like, I don't want someone showing up in you know, sweats or maybe even jeans and looking sloppy or whatever to sell my home.
Can be very dressed up now, Jen.
Okay, fine. If you're wearing like $200 designer jeans, it's okay. But
right. $250, $300.
All right, maybe. Right. Yeah, fine. But yes, I don't want someone looking sloppy selling my home. I want them to look professional.
A level of professionalism.
Because
exactly.
They're representing the home.
They are. And I think that it's very important to also, getting back to relationships in the industry, to have that professional image among other brokers too. You want people who take you seriously and like you and want to do
business. I've never seen you not wearing a suit, I don't think.
Yeah, I dress.
Do you sleep in a suit?
I mean, I do not. I don't sleep in a suit.
But you have suit-like pajamas, right? You have like your pajamas.
I do.
Yeah. Okay,
yes, good. I have one of those pajama tops that have the tie, you know, perfect. That's imprinted on. Perfect.
I would be disappointed if it was otherwise.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Steve, you talked earlier about sellers not being realistic sometimes about market conditions. How do you find yourself? What are the strategies that you use to inject realism into a transaction, into a deal?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first and most important thing is data, and really providing sound evidence as to what you're trying to communicate with them, which is pricing. I mean, pricing's everything. You know, pricing is just the bottom line. And so what we're finding in the market now is, as we transition to a more normalized market that isn't moving at a fever pitch, which we saw for the last 3 years, you really have to impress upon sellers that if they do actually want to sell a property, it has to be priced realistically based on the comparables, meaning, you know, the apartments that have sold in the direct area that people would say are similar to their apartment.
How do you deal with the initial objection to the presentation of data? If someone says, I don't care, this is what I want to price it. How do you deal with that?
Well, so we try to be really realistic with them and say, if you want to price it at, say, you know, $500,000 over where we think it should be, you could end up just sitting on the market for 6 months, a year, and then just end up having to reduce. And so, you
Which
know, you have
bad,
to really
I think.
gauge. What?
Which looks bad when you say price
it
reduced.
It looks bad.
Price reduced looks bad, and when it's sitting there for a long time, it looks like there's something wrong.
Yeah, we go through the process with sellers when we're talking about pricing. And you know, what's really critical, the first month of a listing is critical. If you're going to sell it quick, it's usually going to happen in those first couple of weeks. And so if pricing is wildly out of whack with the market, you're losing that most critical period. And so, you know, to get back to the question, how do we deal with a seller who is possibly unrealistic, is you talk them through it and you say, okay, so here are the ramifications of listing it way above market. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as a broker, you have to say, you know, one of the things I learned, I had a great manager when I first started out. One of the things she said was, your time is money. You know, so you don't want to waste your time with a buyer, with a seller who's completely unrealistic and is going to make you crazy, and then you're never going to get the sale. So, you know, then as a broker, if someone's really realistic, you have to take into account, okay, who is it? Is the relationship worth it to list it over price because you want to have that relationship, or where is it? Is it good marketing just to even have that, you know, on the market for you? There's a lot of things that go into play, but, you know, realistic pricing is key.
Well, we only have a minute left, so let's get your absolute number one best sales tip.
That's good. I mean, I think we've kind of interwoven a bunch of them in here, but I would say it's really about never thinking you know everything and being open to learning and open to, you know, new ways of doing anything. I think it goes back to this whole idea of always being a rookie. Because I think that's what breeds success, is never thinking you know what you need to be doing at all times, and really understand that there's always going to be something new, and being open to that.
And rookies are eager. And rookies are coachable.
And rookies work their asses off.
Teachability. I mean, there's always a teachable moment, even for somebody who's been in the business for 20 years. And you know, I think that's really important. And always being open to, you know, new ways of marketing or new ways of doing things. And it's key.
Very in-depth interview with Steve Dawson, who's a real estate broker in New York City who specializes in selling multi-million-dollar condominiums, normally apartments of some kind. And here's a kid, young kid, in his 30s, early 30s, who literally has made it. He sold $110 million worth of stuff last year, and he's not a New Yorker. And I think that was the deciding factor in his success. When he came to New York City, he didn't have the, I grew up here, I'm tough. I know everything. You're not going to teach me anything new. I'm coming into this business. I'm going to bull my way to success. He came into the business as a student. He didn't have preconceived notions about what was supposed to happen and what wasn't supposed to happen. Rather, he came in as an eager human being to jump into the job, become successful, and do whatever it took to be able to make it happen. Start early, stay late, whatever it was. And I think the fact he was not a New Yorker played to his advantage.
I agree. And I think he did everything it took to learn about the city, learn about the streets, learn where the right homes were or what the neighborhoods are and who would go where and why, and really figure it out. Whereas a lot of people who grew up there just assume, oh, I know that. Oh, it's Upper East Side. Yeah, I know exactly where they don't know. And he took the time to learn it and study it and practice it, essentially.
And present that data. He's very data reliant, and he doesn't lean on assumptions about what the buyer knows. He presents the buyer with that information.
You know, he's one of Wall Street Journal's top 100 sales agents.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
On Wall Street? Oh, no.
Wall Street Journal.
Oh, they list the top 100 agents.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He was ranked in the Wall Street Journal's top 100 sales agents nationwide for 2014-2013.
Wow.
I know.
He didn't even brag about that.
No, of course. That's what I said. I said he's humble.
I would have led with that.
Yeah, he's humble.
Like I would have said, hey, sweetie.
Yeah, he's humble.
Have you seen my numbers?
that like a pickup line in a bar?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way,
have you read the journal lately?
Exactly.
I'm in it.
No, I just happen to have a copy with me.
Exactly. Laminated.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't worry if you lose it. I have plenty at home.
Oh, jeez. Let's talk about one of the ideas that we talked about in this interview, which is injecting realism into the transaction. It's obviously big in real estate. Do you guys think that it's important in all deals and all transactions that buyers and sellers deal with?
The one thing that I found in New York City is there ain't no bullshit. You're either to the point or you're dead. And injecting realism has as its cousin, short and sweet.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that consumers, no matter what industry, whether it's real estate or whatever, think that they're way more educated now, because before they go buy a home or a car or a refrigerator, they're going on the internet and they're Googling it and they're learning about it.
Of course.
And then they think they know everything when they show up to buy it.
And sometimes they're unrealistic, and you might be speaking from experience, right?
So I was selling an apartment home in New York City, and, you know, I really thought it should go for one price. And my broker kept telling me and my family that we were wrong. You know, it's too high. The reason why it's not selling is because it's listed too high. And we were thinking, oh, it's going to go.
Bad broker.
No, he was a great broker. We weren't listening to him.
Yeah.
And so he took measures into his own hands, and he did a drastic thing, in my opinion, to really get us to pay attention to him. He said, I'm going to invite my 10 best broker friends over to do me a favor. They had to take time out of their day to do this. And he put together like a 5-question survey that they all filled out anonymously. And one of the questions was, what would you list this apartment as? And they all gave a price and gave a reason why. And he showed us all the individual prices and then the average price. And the average price was like a couple $100,000 less expensive than the listed price. And he proved his point. So it wasn't just him saying, oh, well, the price should be this, and here's why, and here's the data. He brought in live people who were very well respected in the real estate community and proved his point. And
clearly and concisely.
Oh, yeah. And
irrefutably.
Right. I mean, at that point, what could we say?
Mm-hmm.
We were wrong.
Because I think that's probably a good seller's whine that you always talk about,
mm-hmm.
that the buyer just won't listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some strategies to combat that?
Proof.
So that's what we
proof
do.
Proof is the only way, that's the only strategy.
Yeah. I think so too. I mean, I don't know if we would have listened to him had he not done that. And I don't know if he had used that method before, but it's a great method.
And I'm going to challenge people who might have been listening to this podcast and go, well, what's the point here? And the answer is, the point is the depth by which this kid has come into a marketplace and won. So whatever he said in this, he's not speaking superfluously. I know him. He's a smart young man. And I would go back and listen to this 10 times for the nuance of what he was saying, of the sophistication of the market, of the friendliness of the people that have to be involved, of the trust that has to be established, and of just the general demeanor of the way they conduct themselves. They're not pushy guys. They're not make-a-deal guys.
No.
They're straightforward, and they're at the top of their class.
Yeah, I mean, you just said trust, and that's such a huge thing here. It's all about trust. If someone's selling a $5 million apartment or a $200,000 home, the person that's trusting that's hiring that broker has to trust them, or else they're not hiring them. And everything that they do when they're bringing, I mean, we had a broker right here that just gave the keys to strangers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust him.
No.
Ever again.
Yeah.
And so you can lose trust so quickly.
And by the way, this is a broker that was selling a property of mine that just put a lockbox on the door and you could get a key. And once the key got stolen and once the key, you know, it was a series of near misses until Jennifer convinced me to demand the fact that if this house was, if our condo was going to be sold, that the listing broker had to accompany the buying broker. And the first showing, it got sold.
Mm-hmm.
When they both came together, the very first one, it was on the market for like 4 months. Nothing happened. The first time that they did what we told them to do, it got sold. And I guarantee you that the guy didn't even get it.
Right. But that's pure laziness. Do you think Steve is sending other brokers to his apartments to go see them? No, he's showing up every time.
I think it's interesting that he really never, I'm talking about Steven here, he never said the word trust. His focus was on being intelligent and being likable. Mm-hmm. And I think that says something about trust because you can't trust someone who you think is unintelligent.
Right.
You can't trust someone that you don't like.
Yeah, right. I trust that guy, but he's an idiot. not going to happen.
Well, that doesn't jive.
Right. That's a great point. Yeah. So in case you're looking for more information about Steve, his company is Compass. It's compass.com. And his email address is SD, like Steve Dawson, SD@compass.com. He has his mobile number listed on this website.
No.
He does. Compass.com, yeah. I mean, I guess he wants to be reached. I respect that.
Go to there and find his mobile number.
All right. So anyway, compass.com, and his name is Steve Dawson, SD@compass.com.
That's it for this edition of Sell or Die. Make sure to go to iTunes and subscribe to us and give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. We're also on Stitcher now for those Android and Windows podcast listeners. Just go to Stitcher.com and search for Sell or Die. And it's not too late to sign up for Gittimer Gold. Just go to jeffreygittimer.com/gold to get more information on how to sign up for the 2016 Year of the Sale webinar series. Go to salesinternewyorkminute.com to get more information on how you can get 7 amazing sales videos for only $7. Until next week, everyone, you're either selling or you're dying. And as Jeffrey always says,
get out there and sell until your ass falls off.